Welcome everyone to the West Print Sports Review. I'm Planet FM and I have to say a very, very good afternoon to all the listeners back in studio live. Well, first of all, this show is brought to you by West Print. They're based at 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their number is 09-827-8531 or you can email them on westprint.co.nz. They're proud sponsors of the show. What a cracking day we have in this in the city of Sales. It is this weather has absolutely been scorching. Now, just before we go to our first guest, my thoughts and prayers go out to the people of Tonga and the Tongan community here in Auckland. You know, I think, you know, there has been a real tragedy there, and let's hope that as much support can be given to the Tongan community, especially here in Auckland. Wow, let's start it off. Well, finally, you know, after which portrays something like Neighbours in the last few days, we're finally going to have some tennis. And here to speak to us, he's dubbed the godfather of New Zealand tennis. He's coached Kelly Everton, Chris Lewis, Brett Stevens, Belinda Caldwell. He coached Ivan Lendl when he was world number one. He has been our Davis Cup captain. He's a true legend of tennis. His name is Jeff Simpson. Please, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Eamon. Appreciate the intro.
Well, I have to say, finally, Jeff, we're finally going to get some tennis instead of some drama. Isn't that great?
Yeah, no, it's great that that's all behind us now and we can really concentrate on the tournament because, you know, the first Grand Slam of the year is always really interesting and we're all excited. You know, we love it because most people are off. We get to see it. It's, you know, well televised and we usually have some really, really good tennis in both the men's and the women's. So it's great that we're really getting started and, as I said, we've got that drama behind us and we can move forward.
Absolutely, Jeff. Well, with the change to the seedings in the men's draw, Medvedev, would he be the favourite going into this tournament or could someone like Rafael Nadal have one last swan song before he retires?
Well, I think everybody has been talking Medvedev because he did play he's played well in the last two times down in Australia and he just won the US Open, of course, beating Djokovic in the final. So he's looking to be the form player, but you could never write Rafa off, that's for sure. Although Rafa hasn't played his best, I think he's only won one Australian Open, and it's not his favourite surface down here. But he's got 21 on the line; he's going for his 21st, and I'm sure he's got a great incentive to do that. And as I said before, you can never count him out because he fights bitterly to the end, and you know, he is on the other side of the draw to Medvedev, so if the script was to be written and, Rafa was to have an opportunity to get there, he could meet, you know, as you said, Medvedev, probably the favourite right now, to meet him in the final.
Is there any dark horses that could come through in the men's draw? Take, for example, could someone like a Cameron Norrie, who was based in New Zealand, now represents Great Britain, could he go quite far in this tournament?
Well, Cameron, you know, like he had a tremendous 2021, especially the end of the year where he won, you know, a Masters tournament and he took his ranking up to 12. He played the ATP Cup. He didn't get any wins in that and he probably didn't play to his capabilities. But he's certainly a dark horse and he's actually up in the quarter that Djokovic has now come out of, and I think the top seed in that quarter is Berrettini, and as we know, Berrettini is coming back from injury, and so there's definitely a chance for him to to play his way into that semi-final, that's for sure.
And of course, with the host, is there anyone in the Australian the men's draw that can give us Australia a bit of hope going into this tournament?
Well, it's funny, they've got that young Australian that's been out for years. I think he's 25 now, Kokkinakis, and he's just won the last tournament in Adelaide and beat Isner in, 6-7, 7-6, 7-6. You know, and Isner's always a tough player to get through, and he won the final and, coming back from a set down to win the second set 7-6 and then the third 6-3. You know, his form is quite good, so he's a guy that could, he may have a couple of good matches and the the more he plays and the more confident he gets, he could play quite well. He's always got that Demonair who played pretty well in the ATP Cup. And of course you've got Kyrgios down the bottom, who runs into Medvedev, but he hasn't been playing, so you never know really what to expect from him. But those are probably their three main hopes, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, then we go to the women's draw, and of course, the top seed for that is Ash Barty. Now, obviously, the pressure on her, especially being in Australia, do you believe that Ash Barty can win this? Win the Australian Open for the women's, or is there someone coming through like Emily Ratajkowska or Naomi Osaka, or is there someone else that we should keep an eye on there, Jeff?
Yeah, look, the girls your first question, can she win it? Of course she can. She's a very good player. She will be playing in a home crowd, front of a home crowd, so hopefully they can get behind her. And, you know, she's definitely one of the favourites to win it. Yeah, the woman is always good to watch because there's, you know, somebody comes through and there's quite a few upsets generally, like we saw at the US Open. I think we've never seen it before where a player comes from through qualifying and then wins the actual whole event and doesn't lose a set. I mean, that's unprecedented. You never see that. You probably won't see that again. So yeah. You don't know who's in there and who can do that. And they're all good matches. I mean, as you mentioned, Osaka, she's actually in Artie's quarter. And then you've got, you know, somebody like Sakari who plays well. She's in that quarter too. So they've got some tough matches to come through. And you see Raducanu, she plays Sloane Stephens the first round, who's a US Open champion. So some tough matches there for the girls. And, you know, it's just going to be on the form of who comes through, really. But, you know, it's always exciting because, you know, you've got all those girls seem to have good chances if they can strike form.
And, of course, it is on the luck of the draw, and so it's on the luck of the day.
Yes.
As far as New Zealand interests go, obviously we've got Michael Venus, Marcus Daniel and Adam Sitek that will be part of the double draw. Michael Venus and his partner are the six seeds for this tournament. Do you believe that Michael... what are the chances for, say, Michael to, say, make this final and try and win his second Grand Slam doubles tournament?
Well, he's always in with a good chance because he's proven himself. He's a proven Grand Slam champion and he's playing for him. He's played well with his partner. They've won tournaments before. So, you know, if they can get going and get a roll going, there's nothing to say that they can't go through and go all the way. I mean, he's got a definite chance to do that. So we'll all be, obviously, because it's down under, we'll all be cheering him on and, you know, it'll be good to see.
It'll be great to see if he's in the final against, say, Marcus Daniel, his doubles partner at the Olympics. So that'll be fantastic. Just on some local tennis news, there has been a new Davis Cup captain appointed, and it's a guy you know really well and a guy I've always liked, Kelly Everton, who's been a top 50 player. He's been a top 50 player. He's always worn that Kiwi fern on his heart. It's great to see a guy like Kelly coming back into the fold here in New Zealand tennis.
Yes, we've been very fortunate that, you know, the last Davis Cup captain was Alistair Hunt and did a tremendous job getting those guys through up into the, you know, especially into the last round last time. He couldn't go to Newport because of the COVID situation, but you know he's done a really, really good with the team, and I think Kelly's coming in at a time where, you know, he can probably take them the next step further because a lot of the groundwork's been done, and they've got a group of players coming underneath that are at college and they're out there playing. So, you know, I mean, having somebody like Kelly involved, who was one of the best Davis Cup players we've had, and he knows what it takes to win those matches. In fact, I think his highest ranking was 31, so he's been up there, so he certainly can pass on a lot of knowledge and experience to those guys, and he's been coaching up in Seattle for the last 20 odd years there, so you know he hasn't been out of tennis, he's been fully involved with tennis, and so you know, to have him back involved again as a and as an ex Davis Cup player, I think is really good to continue on. And it's, you know, she said before, he loves Davis Cup, and so he's very enthusiastic about it. And in fact, I talked to him the other day, and he was, you know, over the moon that he was appointed. So that's a good thing going forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's great to have these. Have a guy like Kelly coming back to him. You know, Kelly always, from my perspective, and the glory days of Davis Cup when you were the captain, Jeff, there were people like Kelly Everett and Brett Stevens. So they really, in the late 80s and early 90s, they made New Zealand very, very competitive when the odds were really stacked against us. But we were able to put on some fantastic displays. And, of course, we talk about Davis Cup in the 80s with Russell Simpson, Chris Lewis, in the 70s and 80s with yourself, Onnie Parrin and Brian Fairley. So, you know, we've got a great history in Davis Cup.
It is. And New Zealand has always sort of actually batted above their weight, in Davis Cup. And this has some, you know, we've had some big wins. I mean, you know, Russell, my brother, and Chris Lewis, you know, being in Italy that one time to make the semi-finals of the World Group, that was phenomenal. And Kelly Everton and Brett Stephen winning in Christchurch against Yugoslavia when they were third seeds was a tremendous effort, and getting to the quarterfinals of the World Group then. So, you know, we have had, you know, a lot of success in Davis Cup in the World Group, and then, you know, qualifying most times out of the Asian zone. So, you know, the history keeps going. And as I said, you know, the team is going well. You get like some Mike, you know, coming back and playing, Marcus playing and for the doubles. And then now you've got a group of young Kiwis that are out there at college or out there on the circuit, all battling and wanting to try and make that team. So, you know, it's a good thing to have. And you know, hopefully they can, you know, do well out there and you know, bring some rewards for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, let's hope in the next 5 to 6 years that we can get a singles player that's consistently within that top 125, especially in both the men's and both the women's part of the professional tour, Jeff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, that's the aim for Tennis New Zealand, to try and do that. And you know, you've got some talent out there, and it's just developing that talent and obviously getting the good advice and getting them on the road playing a lot of tennis. And as you know, it has been very hard with what the whole world has been going through, but now they seems to be, you know, everybody seems to be getting on with it and tournaments are going ahead. So it's a great opportunity for the players to get out there and, you know, those matches under their belt, which is what they need to get the experience.
Absolutely. Jeff, I've really enjoyed this chat this afternoon, and hopefully we can do more of it during the tournament. And I hope you have a very, very good afternoon.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on, Em.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeff Simpson. I have to say, he is probably the real expert in for tennis in this country, and he's a fantastic bloke as well too. Has done a lot for tennis in this country. Well, next up, we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to maybe have a quick chat to my old mate Noel Barclay. We'll be talking a bit of football.
This lonely game we play. Thoughts of weeping disappear every time I see your face. No matter how hard I try to understand the reasons why we carry on.
Welcome everyone back to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM, and I have to say, well, it's been a full-on week of football. There's been quite a bit of news happening, especially around the Chris Wood transfer, a full-on weekend of EPL, a bit of A-League, and of course, to join us, as he always does every Monday, former All White and the Deputy Mayor of Waiheke, because I'll be speaking to the Mayor of Waiheke after this as our special guest, Noel Barkley. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and please send my best regards to Sir Peter, who I often bump into around the traps, usually with his kayak on the top of his roof rack. But certainly is a character.
Yeah, that's our special surprise, and so he's come along to help us out. And no doubt he's going to give me a bit of a hard time, because myself and the old Butch, we've had a few laughs over the years. We've met on many social occasions, but let's rip into it, Noel. First of all, before we start going to some of the football results, the transfer of Chris Wood to Newcastle. It is an estimated £25 million, probably close to 15 million New Zealand. He is the highest paid 30-year-old to be signed this year. How big is this impact, Noel?
Look, for him it was a no-brainer, really. He had 18 months to run on his Burnley contract. They've been struggling this year. His form hasn't been overly great. He's been getting subbed around about the 60-minute mark, and obviously opportunity to go to Newcastle, where 52,000 sell out every week. Fantastic fans, home fans, and fanatical, and certainly a club that are going to, they've got the resources behind them now to try and be an elite club. And whether that happens this year or next year, it'll certainly happen. So, from his point of view, it was massive. They had a release clause there with the pet, and isn't an option. I just think about Chris Wood and good on him. He's got an extra year contract, it's going to be a challenge for him, because the microscope was on him. They drew in the weekend, and he didn't get a lot of service, so of course he gets a lot of stick. So unfortunately, that's the other part that comes with it. You get more money and you get a bit of glory, but you if you don't score, and that's what you had to do, you're going to suffer. So that's not necessarily his fault. Newcastle haven't been great, so they need to get some more people in and better service. You can't score goals if you don't get opportunities. But overall, very happy for the guy. I'm very pleased to hear him talk about how important it was to play for the All Whites in the window in March, and then later in the year, hopefully in Qatar. So, yeah, he is passionate about New Zealand, and he has kept that, and he was very clear about that in all of his commentary.
Yeah, and that's the thing I noticed. I listened to that interview, and he's made it clear. And I think the big thing, you get the ball into Chris Wood. Chris Wood has got a brilliant scoring record. You have a look at his scoring record for Burnley, and that's a side that probably doesn't play that sort of attractive brand of football where they're going to get that ball into there. But he's a proven goal scorer, no one. And this is why I think Eddie Howe's got him there, so that he can rescue them out of this relegation battle.
Yeah, the season's only half over. I think although Man City looks like they're going to run away with it and win it quite easily, down the bottom it's not so clear, because there's still, anywhere up to about 12th is potentially could be in that battle. So, you know, you only need to win sort of two or three on the bounce, and all of a sudden you can be, you know, close to the top ten. So, yeah, look, it's a long way to go. Quite strange to hear that the last game of the season, Newcastle play Burnley away. I can't think what pressure will be under Chris Wood that day if they need to win, but they certainly won't be getting much praise from the Burnley fans.
Of course he won't. But, well, we might as well rip into it right now. Some of the results over the weekend. And this one was a not a bad game. Manchester City 1, Chelsea 0. Now, I agree with you, Noel. I think the Premiership is already over. And while no matter what people say about Guardiola, they're going to win a Premiership with the Premier League without a recognised striker. What was your thoughts on this game?
Best team won, but in saying that, Lukaku had two very good chances that you would £19 million player you'd expect him to bury, and probably should have been a draw. But City definitely the best team, and you know, when they've got sort of the front six all scoring, you don't actually need a number nine, and God knows what it'd be like if I had a number nine to be scoring even more. But I think just the way they play and the way they rotate, and Foden and Grealish and De Bruyne, all of the midfield end up in the nine position, that, you know, when they rotate. So look, they don't need a nine. It might be different in the Champions League. I think that, you know, the defences are probably a bit better in those top European teams, but I think in the English Premiership now, they could win 15, 20 points. I don't see really anybody that's going to get close. Maybe Liverpool, but you know, they've got their problems as well. So I'm City to win it all day long.
Yeah, and of course some of the other results over the weekend. Brighton got a 1-1 draw with Crystal Palace. Wolves, they're actually doing quite well at the moment. That 3-1 win over Southampton. Newcastle 1, Watford 1. Obviously, a late goal for Watford secured the draw there. And of course, while we have to speak about this one, Noel, Aston Villa 2, Manchester United 2. Manchester United gave up a 2-goal lead, and to let Aston Villa in there, Coutinho, the ex-Liverpool player who's been signed on loan to Aston Villa, was to score the equaliser. I must admit, there's big problems at Manchester United.
Yeah, it was a funny game, Eamon. I mean, I actually thought for 60, 65, 67 minutes, they actually played okay, considering the way they had been playing. And you know, they'd obviously... Shaw, McTominay suspended, Ronaldo injured. You know, they seemed to do okay. My real criticism really to them on the weekend was game management. So, you know, Matic can't really play any more than 70 minutes. Fred, I don't think he can play at all. So there was a real opportunity at 2-0 was to close the game out. Should have made some subs, get some fresh legs on, and close the game down, but they just fell over. And Coutinho, what a debut. I mean, he scores one, sets one up. In the end, they could have won it, really. So, yeah, it's disappointing that you know, you don't close those games out 2-0. It's just unheard of from a Man United team. And the problems are inherent. You know, the whole story about Martial not willing to be on the bench and stuff like that, if that's true, I mean, it just shows you where the great club has gone. So a lot of work to be done there, and it's going to take more than Ralph to do that. It's a rebuild job for sure.
And I think the biggest thing that probably struck to me is that basically it's just a really good holding midfielder. Like they signed DVB, Donny van de Beek, but, you know, he hasn't had a look in, and the rumour is that he could be passed on to Newcastle United, which I think they'll take him in a heartbeat. But, you know, real concerns there at Manchester United, and, you know, the rumour mill still goes on. It looks like the rumour is very strong that Ronaldo will not be there next season if they can't get anywhere near Champions League. So that's a real concern. Another concern would be... for Everton fans, they lost 2-1 to Norwich, and I have to say, Benitez is under a lot of pressure from Norwich fans at the moment.
Well, he's been fired now. I mean, so the only thing worse than being a Man United fan at the minute is, of course, is being an Everton fan, because what's happened there was predicted by many, that you just could not have a ex-Liverpool manager look after Everton. And it's just been a series of very strange things. I've had lots of injuries, really bad luck with injuries. He's got rid of players that performed really well for them last year, like Hannes and obviously Digne, who signed for Villa, who actually looks very good for Villa, I have to say, on his debut. So, yeah, look, a disaster, really. And Rafa just continues to be able to sort of bounce from club to club, pick up millions of dollars in fees and compensation, and then left Everton in a bit of a mess, to be honest. They lost the plot, really. So, yeah, he will move on, and no doubt somebody else will pick him up and suffer the same fate. But I do feel a bit sorry for them. But of course, the big rumor now is that it's Wayne Rooney is in the driving seat for that job. Maybe Martinez, but actually, an Everton player doing great at Derby. They won again on the weekend, so wouldn't it be amazing to see Wayne Rooney back at Everton?
It'll be a fantastic comeback. Well, some of the other games, obviously Liverpool were very clinical, win 3-0 win over Brentford, and of course West Ham. They every time they seem to be heading towards that top four, basically they get beaten. They got beaten 3-2 by Leeds, and this is, you know, there must be some real concerns there with consistency at West Ham.
I must admit, I woke up this morning and saw that they lost, and then obviously checked out the highlights. I couldn't believe they were actually playing again, because it feels like they only played a couple of days ago, but it was actually 3 days ago. So, I've since seen Moyes coming out saying you can't play every 3 days; it's impossible. But I think that really gets down to about having depth of squad, and they probably don't have that depth of squad. You know, most clubs have 25 good players. They might have 16 or 17. So if you want to compete with the big boys like Liverpool, I mean, Liverpool, you obviously got lots of players injured, lots of players with COVID and away in the Afghan, but they still go and win 3-0 at home to Brentford. So it's all about strength and depth, and I think that'll catch West Ham United out in the end.
I think it will. Well, some of the results in the A-League, Adelaide City 2, Melbourne City 2, Sydney FC 1, Brisbane Roar 1. In the W-League, the Phoenix went down, and probably a better performance, 3-2 to the Brisbane Roar. But, you know, the big talking point in the W-League at the moment would be the performance of Hannah Wilkinson.
Yeah, she's doing great. I mean, I remember talking to on air a while back saying that she may not be the answer in the World Cup, and she certainly looks like she's very happy to step up and be a goal scorer. I know it's a little bit different playing international football than it is playing maybe in the W League, but she looks good. She's hungry, and I mean, if she has a great season, that's going to be really good for the Ferns. And they've got a bunch of games coming up in America, and they will hopefully continue to do well, and hopefully she can be a part of that. Their problem has always been a number nine who can stick the ball in the net, and Hannah's certainly doing that at the minute. And good to see that our girls get a couple of goals. I know they didn't win, but they certainly give a better account of themselves. But look, I couldn't believe Sydney drew home to Brisbane down the bottom, and that's definitely some issues at Brisbane, and I think Steve Corica is skating on thin ice from what I'm reading across the Tasman.
Yeah, it'd have to be skating on thin ice. Well, you know what, I'm going to be skating on thin ice, because I've got to give someone a call, and he's likely to give me a bit of a, you know, a bit of a hard time because of my past social behaviours in his company. So, first of all, I really enjoyed this chat, and we'll catch up next week, and you have a great rest of the week, Mel.
Great. Thank you, Eamon. Say good day to Peter for me.
I certainly will. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Noel Barkley, and I have to say, what a fantastic football analyst. Well, the cat's out of the bag. I better go. This joke is going to give me a bit of a hard time, so I'm going to play a bit of music, and then you're going to see me rightfully get a very, very, very hard time.
lessons until you are ready to confess. But all the time, all the time, I'm alone. I'll know. And you can use my skin to bury secrets in.
Welcome everyone back to the West Print Sports Review. Well, this time of the day I'm going to be speaking to what I believe is a real good New Zealander, a real honest bloke. He's given so much to, he's given so much of his money, his time and his help to charity, to business. He's a mad warrior supporter, but most of all, he's a real good bugger, and he's a guy I actually like. And in the past, he's given me the odd kick up the backside when I've been misbehaved, when we've been at social occasions, but it's a pleasure to have him. Please welcome Sir Peter Charles Leach, the Mad Butcher. Mad Butcher, welcome.
Listen, I said I'd give you $5 if you give me a good rap. I didn't say I'd give you $500, mate. You went a bit bloody overboard with that introduction.
Well, if I didn't, you would have got stuck into me the next time I see you.
Stick to the rules of the game, mate. Stick to the rules of the game. It's like a game of rugby league. You got to stick to the rules, mate. Now, and don't ring me collect again.
Oh, okay. But I'm a bit, New Year's, the New Year's Christmas period, I've been a bit broke, so, you know, I can't really afford, you know.
Well, you want to be on $5. The pension like me, mate. I'm on the pension.
Oh, I can see you struggling. I can see you struggling, Peter. I can see you struggling. Hey, just quickly, mate, it's great to hear your voice, Peter, just before we start ripping into each other, or you ripping into me. You know, our thoughts and prayers have to go out to the people of Tonga and the Tongan community here in New Zealand.
No question. And, of course, Tonga plays a big part in the rugby league family. We've had so many good Tongan players play. I spoke to Conrad Harrell the other day, making sure his family's all well. He's a very proud Tongan, ex-Tongan player, you know, and living in England, of course, but his heart will always be in Tonga, And, mate, they struck it really bad. I mean, we were lucky here in Waiheke Island. A couple of the beaches had some big waves, but I never saw any real big waves down here. So we were lucky. We dodged the bullet, you know what I mean? But I know the Warriors and the New Zealand League are looking at what they can do to support over there, and that's good stuff. And to be so, we should, because they've been great servants to the game of rugby league.
And they're
and not only rugby league, the rugby and many other sports, you know.
Hmm.
So that's, you know, I was going to bring that up, but you had to jump in first, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a... Yeah. You know, I'm short on a bit
what
of a big
mouth.
What
did I tell you? I told you I would bring up... I wanted... If I went on the show, I had to bring up about Tonga, and you had to jump in. Now, I want to give you a date. March the 13th.
Yep.
What do you think's happening that day?
It's the opening match of the NRL, and it's the New Zealand Warriors.
Who are they playing?
Oh, geez, I don't. You know, we didn't speak about this. Is it the Gold Coast Titans, Peter?
A lucky guess, mate. A lucky guess.
I'm a sports.
Where are they playing?
Well, I believe they're playing in Brisbane at Redcliffe Stadium.
Central Coast Stadium. We got it wrong.
Oh, okay. Geez,
Coast Stadium. All right.
Okay. Well, I better get it right. But I'm going to say this to you, Peter. I have to say I'm really looking forward to the Warriors season this year, and I'm hoping that we can make the playoffs. But more importantly, Peter, I'm really hoping that we can actually get to Mount Smart Stadium and see the Warriors play, so we can catch up like we did a few years ago, where you probably weren't, where I was, wasn't at my best behaviour due to the amount of alcohol.
I'll put you in your place, though.
Oh, you did.
Let me say this to you, and I say this very respectfully. Don't hold your breath to get a home game. But with this COVID, it's thrown the spanner amongst the works. And so we just got to hope the team can get through the season, you know. I mean, the news broke early early this week about some of the players having COVID, you know, and that affects it because, you know, they can't train. I know that the team was training in three different groups, you know. Yeah, I mean, like any Warrior fan, I'd love to see them in the top eight. I'd love to see them win the grand final. But at the same token, you've got to be realistic. Mm-hmm. And we're living in very, very strange days. We never know when we're going to go into lockdown. We don't know what... You don't want to make big plans going forward. You know what I mean? We just got to... I like to say we've got to ride the wave, you know? And I know the club and that are doing everything they can to keep the players safe. And the players want to play. They want to put in a performance because they weren't happy with their performance last year. But we just need to keep our fingers crossed. If we do get a home game at Mount Smart Stadium, it's going to be on Friday the 9th, Mount Smart Stadium against Manly. And then on, I think it's May the 2nd, a Sunday, we've got the Cowboys. And then on Friday, I think it's the 21st, it's the Tigers at Mount Smart Stadium. So, you know, we have got a few games penciled in, so we'll just have to wait and see. The NRL have repaid the Warriors' loyalty by giving us quite a few home games. Now, a lot of people said we should have every home game. You know, next year we should, or this year now it is, we should have had every game at home. That's not going to work. They've got to keep the clubs over in Australia happy as well. But I think they've given us about 11 or 10 home games.
Yeah.
You know, about 8 or 9, I think. So, you know, we've got to be grateful for that. But, yeah, look, don't build your expectations up too high or you'll get very disappointed. I hope I'm wrong. I'm hope I'm wrong, and I hope we get every home game we've been promised. But I'm also a realist. I might be mad, but I'm a realist as well. And so, just, you know, ride the wave with the butcher. Ride the wave with the butcher.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you there, Butch. And also, Peter, I better call you Sir Peter because, you
call
know,
me
only...
Peter. No. You only call me Sir at an official function. And this is not an official. This is a casual chat between two people. So it's don't need to worry about the formalities.
Okay.
You can call me what you like. I might hang up if you say something nasty, but so that's your call.
I would never say that to you. I never say that to you, Butch.
Well, we're mates. Lounge.
Pardon?
You're in my lounge. You were terrible. What you said to me.
Oh, well, you took that. Remember that poor fellow? You know, you took the man's poor crush. The guy was standing on there, and your friend to stick it in the place that doesn't shine to me, Butch. I was a bit concerned, and then someone came along, and you're all nice, and then you ranted at me again. I must admit, it was a good... Actually, I must admit, Peter, every time I'm in the lounge, it's brilliant, and you are one of the best hosts I've ever met, Peter.
But to be fair... That's why I've given the lounge away, because what I used to do to you and many other people you couldn't do today, it was all done in humour, it was all done in good fun, but we're so PC now, it would not work. It only would take one person to complain, and then you'd have every nutter in the world getting on the case, you know? And so I made the decision, the club were very disappointed, because they said I could run that lounge till the day I died, but I said... You know, I told them the reasons and they could see my point because they never worried what went on. That was between me and the people. And everyone had, for those people that don't know, I used to run a lounge at Mount Smart Stadium on the top of the grandstand, in the West Grandstand. And Wally Lewis said it's one of the best views of any stadium he's been to because it's at a nice height, you know, and you look down and you can see everything. And, you know, we had a lot of fun. And people used to pay, I forget what they paid each week to come. First of all, they had to be a season ticket holder.
Yep.
And then they had to pay to come. But, of course, we allowed members to bring in a visitor every now and then. They would ring me, can I bring this guy in, Butch? I said, okay, then. We'd let them bring in. Because we were restricted by numbers, by security. And here again, these days, you've got to be very careful because if anything went wrong, God, if you had too many in there, you could get sued. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Peter. And of course, now with all these protocols as well, too. Yeah.
We just look back on the good memories, and we're having a bit of a reunion late earlier this year.
Oh,
some of the lounge members, we're going to all have a reunion. a whole lot come over. I tell you what happened last year.
Yeah.
A guy rang me and he said, look, we'd like to come over to Waiheke, a couple of us guys from the lounge, and watch the game with you. I said, yeah, that's all right, mate. We could get maybe, I don't have a big house on Waiheke, but we'd get 10 or 12 in the lounge, you know. It'd be a bit cramped, but we could work that. And I've got the bar filled, so, you know, you wouldn't have a problem there. He rings me back 2 weeks later, he said, oh, but it's not going to work. I said, why? He said, well, most of the lounge want to come now. And so most of the, we hired the Waiheke Surfdale Bowling Club, and we hired the half the club out, and we had a function there. And they all turned up, and they wanted to repeat it again. That's how much the lounge meant to them. You know, they enjoyed it. It's we become like a big family, to be fair, you know, which was great. Memories make one thing about getting old.
Well, I have to say, and it was a big family. I know somebody, a close personal friend of ours, both Tomo. He actually went. He told me it was a great time over in on Waiheke, as part of it, the crew of the lounge. So yeah. So what's up for the rest of the week for you, Sir Pete, Butch?
Well, to be fair, I'm just washing my car now because I've ordered some water. Our water tank's pretty low. So they'll fill it right up. So I thought I might as well wash the car, clean it, because we get a lot of salt air on the car.
Yep.
And some of the roads are dusty, so it gets a bit dusty. So I'll just clean that up.
Oh, okay.
And hold on, my wife, what there?
When you finish, close all those windows down.
All right, she just give me another job. All right, I've just got to hose all the windows down now as well. I'll be here all day.
That's good.
I went for a kayak this morning. Then I went out, I went to have breakfast. My breakfasts are becoming famous.
Yeah, they certainly
on
are.
Facebook and Instagram. Incidentally, if they want to follow me on Facebook, they go to Sir Peter Charles Leach, and on Instagram, it's Sir Mad Butcher. But, we went out for a kayak. We didn't stay out as long as we wanted to because we got to a certain point, and then it turned from choppy to very, very choppy white caps. So we decided, no, we're not going to attempt that. We'll go back in. But we had about an hour and a half out. Yep. Then I went to a local cafe down here and had a nice big breakfast. And as I say, I'm just washing the car now and answering people on social media, you know. I mean, are you big on social media?
Yeah, well, we chat on social media, Peter.
What name do you use?
Eamon Hallisey.
Next time, say the guy on the radio, so I know.
I certainly will.
I've got 19,000 on Facebook, and I think it's about 14 or something thousand on Instagram, you know. And they're all friends, you know. Like, I reply to everybody. The only people I don't reply to are the ones that I miss, and you do miss them sometimes. Like, I come across someone I hadn't replied to from 2019, which I replied to today, that had come up today. Crazy. I can't work it out. It's a young one sport. I'm 77 coming on 78, but I do love it. It gives me something to do during the day. Yeah.
It certainly does. Well, Butch, I've really enjoyed our chats, and from time to time we might have a chat. You might just have to sort me out if I'm being misbehaving a bit. But it's always a great pleasure to talk to you, Peter.
Can I just say before I go, a message to everybody. Let's all try to share the love out there, because a lot of people are hurting. It may be you just ring someone that's a bit lonely, or you might pop around and, you know, take a cup of water around or something to someone. There's many ways you can share the love without having to spend a lot of money. And if we all make an effort, we can make the world a better place. I'll leave you with that thought. Okay?
Dead right, Butch. You have a great rest of the week, and we'll be chatting on social media, and hopefully we'll be chatting during the year. And let's hope that we can avoid any lockdowns, and let's make sure we all have a good week and be safe, Peter.
Exactly. Well said. Okay.
Catch you later, Peter. Okay. Cheers, mate.
Thank you, mate. Bye.
So Peter Charles Leach, what a great bloke. God, he loved giving me a bit of a hard time. Well, we better put on a bit of music, and next up I've got Mark Watson.
Everybody gotta face their highs and their lows. And in my life, there's a love that I put aside, 'cause I was busy loving something else. And so for every little thing you hold on to, you gotta let something else go. I wish I got a little bit more. A little more. Now, shoulda, woulda,
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review here on Planet FM, and now we have the man, the legend, and a very, very happy new year to my good friend Mark Watson. Mark, how are you, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Actually, happy new year to you and your listeners. No, actually, I'm just actually driving up towards Picton at the moment, so I've just come through Kaiakura, and got to say, it's a part of the country that I haven't done before, and like a lot of New Zealand, stunning in its own unique way. So, yeah, not a bad day.
It sounds like we've got a cracker here up in Auckland. Well, we might as well rip into it. Well, I have to say, the players started in the Australian Open, but I have to say the last few days with this thing with Novak Djokovic and the authorities in Australia and the organisers, it's been like a bad version of Neighbours. I see fault on both sides. Why did it come to this point? It's actually stained the tournament. So I think it's time to get on with the tennis.
Yeah, look, I don't think the Australian government had much choice, did they? I mean, you've got to address perception. Now, whether or not Novak Djokovic believes he's got a genuine legal case or not, you've got to, it just looks like there are two sets of rules that he's allowed to play when they've got so many sort of vaccine-based protocols in place where you must be vaccinated to do this and do that. We stopped for somebody here in New Zealand, and then suddenly you get somebody comes along with a high profile and they sort of seem to be able to get away with it. And so they should have sorted it out a lot earlier. You're 100% correct. It has damaged the tournament. You sort of hope that now that tournament has started, someone like Abati out of Australia on the women's side can, you know, maybe start capturing the public's imagination and shift the negative thinking to what it actually should be about, which is the tennis. And so, you know, the likes of, you know, you've still got some very, very good players here and Nadal and stuff, and, you know, hopefully they sort of use their PR machine to try and just, push the public and push the media interest to the actual sporting side of it rather than the controversy. But for some reason, just Novak Djokovic is just not that popular, is he? And I think part of that is, Amon, is that you've got two people who are incredibly endeared in Federer, as we mentioned, and Nadal, and I just don't think there's ever room for three at the head of the table. And so somebody's always going to be, somebody's always going to be the villain, and it just happens to be Novak Djokovic, and he probably hasn't helped himself either. And his parents in the background too, sort of, you know, using analogies along the line of Jesus Christ, almost sort of saying, look, they crucified Jesus, now they're crucifying our son, like he's almost in that same sort of realm, which is, probably doesn't go down too well.
And I think the big thing is, you imagine if this had been held here in Auckland, I'd actually not be happy. You have a look at, there's a lot of Australians trying to get back home as they've been separated by this pandemic, and for some guy to say that he believes that he's got the legal rights, well, I really feel the authorities, it should never have got to this point in the first place. I think it was mishandled a bit. He should, the protocol should have been clear. And I think he knew the protocols, but the end of the day is it should never have reached there, Mark. And that's been my biggest debate.
But I think the organisers behind the scenes quietly wanted him here. I think they underestimated the groundswell.
Yeah.
I think they probably, if it was all said and done, I think you'd probably find out that, they probably tried to use some political clout to get this guy in. Look, it's not dissimilar here. You know, there's been a little bit of a debate in and around the singer Lord. She's coming back for Jacinda Ardern's wedding, and, there was rumour that she hadn't done MIQ, and in fact she has done MIQ, but the bigger issue is how did she get a slot in MIQ, I guess, is probably the bigger issue going on. And so, I think the government's going to be really, really careful when it comes to celebrity and when it comes to people who are perceived to be in a position of power or at least have the financial nous to maybe pull some strings. Society falls down if we don't have a level playing field, do we?
Absolutely, Mark. Well, I was just going to say, just before, of course, they had the New Zealand National Criteria was held in Christchurch. I don't know whether you were down for it, or the criteria was raced through the city of Christchurch. Did you get a chance to have a look at that, Mark?
Look, I have commentated that in the past when it's been up in Auckland, but I'll be perfectly honest, I wasn't really aware of it was going on. I see Shane Archibald ended up winning the men's, which is great. National Road Cycling Champion, I think, 2 years ago, which was called in Cambridge when he narrowly beat George Bennett. So, look, Yeah, Criterium Racing is an interesting one. It's sort of like a national title here, but it doesn't maybe carry the same weight as, say, being the New Zealand, well, certainly not the same weight as carrying sort of the New Zealand Road Championship, yeah, or possibly the New Zealand Time Trial Champion, but it is a tough format of racing, short circuits, pace goes on, pace goes off, certainly suits the sprinters, suits the boys who are used to sort of, you know, suit the, I guess, those guys that have come from a track cycling background. But look, always a great spectacle, and the way they do these events, and it's no different in Christchurch, they have sort of C-grade races, which allows, you know, riders maybe who don't, you know, have the best ability to get out there and have a crack, and then they have the B grade, which can still hurt and suffer, and then they, you know, turn up and have an elite race. And most people at the end of the day, if you want to, you know, race the elite race, good luck to you. You might last a lap or two. So, no, look, well done to him. And, yeah, a great that, again, we've got another big event going on in the downtown main centre of this country.
And I think it's brilliant how it's through that city, and you know one day I really hope that within Auckland we could have it coming through our, and right in the middle of our city, because I think it would really bring out the spectators, you know, because I always enjoy watching cycling. I think it's especially road racing, especially time trials. I've always been a big fan of the. Just on one thing, Chris Wood's transfer. You know, how would you rate this just from your view as a sporting journalist, do you think this is one of the big moments?
I think it was the right move for Chris Wood. I sort of look at it a little bit like Steven Gerrard, the former Liverpool player, coaching sort of Rangers in Scotland. Really great opportunity, and then he, the Aston Villa job comes along, and it's a big club, and it's the English Premier League, and you know, he felt he'd probably done enough in terms of his coaching development at Rangers. And, you know, and look, it was just too good an opportunity to turn down. And I think Chris Wood's the same. Look, he's paid his dues at Burnley. They're not a big club. Yes, they stayed up in the Premiership. Will they stay up this season? Probably not. You could ask the same questions in Newcastle, but Newcastle is a big, big club. A club that, you know, to be fair, has really sort of underachieved since the days of Peter Beardsley and Kevin Keegan and sort of the early 1990s. But, you know, they do now have Saudi Arabian money. I think Chris Wood, given a better midfield, given players who can actually put him into gaps or provide him greater opportunities. Look, I think he's an Ian Rush type player. He's a finisher, and I don't think we've seen the best of Chris Wood. I can understand why he did go. Will he end up have the season in the Championship next year, because Newcastle could end up getting relegated? Well, I'd imagine the next sort of 8 weeks will be really, really important for the club. But no, well done to Chris Wood. Great story. Guy out of Hamilton. It just shows that, you know, if you've got some talent, you are a good footballer. It doesn't matter where you come from. In New Zealand, you can still end up, you know, playing in the Premier League.
And, of course, he's the second highest paid New Zealander behind Stephen Adams. So that's, but, you know, it's not about the money. It's about, you know, this guy is representing New Zealand while he's in the EPL, and it's great to have a Kiwi in there, and he raises the flag. Just some of your thoughts. The Ashes is finally over, and I think there'll be a few English fans will be happier that it's over. But some of your thoughts from it, Mark.
Oh, yeah, look, I think arguably, and I think it's been well documented, probably the worst England team, I think, Chile, for a long time. But a lot of sides struggle away from home. A lot of sides struggle in Australia, very few sides. I think India won a series a couple of years back, and Australia were in a little bit of a lull. But, yeah, English cricket, what is going on there? Is it the impact of T20? There's a lot of talk that they just have too many professional teams over there, too many county teams, I think something like 18 county teams, and therefore the talent spread too thin. They just don't have that depth. Well, you look at Australia, and I think they've got, what, six teams, not dissimilar here in New Zealand. They've got to address the way they're doing things in the UK. But, yeah, really, really disappointing. But I'm not convinced maybe that Australia is quite as good if they make themselves out to be, or certainly quite as good as the Australian cheerleading commentating team make themselves to be. You know, Australia need to go overseas and prove that they can conquer away from home, which I think is the challenge for all international sides. I think in recent times New Zealand's actually done okay in that area. You know, and you go back only sort of 4 or 5 years ago, and it was South Africa that were really the team that, you know, had the ability to play home and away. But South Africa clearly in a rebuilding phase as well. So Look, yes, England awful, predictable, I think. So I don't think anyone genuinely believes England were ever going to be a chance of winning the Ashes in Australia. They haven't for eternity. And, the challenge is now, 2 years' time, when Australia have to go to England, and can England put a side together that can be competitive?
That's going to be the big question, you know. Of course, with South Africa, while they're in a rebuilding stage, Mark, they did beat India in a series in South Africa, and of course they're coming here in March, and I've got a feeling they're going to be very, very competitive when they get out to New Zealand.
Oh, it depends how New Zealand plays, but I mean, if you've got South Africa coming out here, let's play them in our conditions. Let's not put them on benign type wickets, you know, where every side's capable of just some sort of flat track for bullies. You know, if they're going to come to New Zealand, let's put them on a green track. Let's get our pace bowlers. Let's put them under a little bit of pressure. We seem to get quite good results at Hagley Oval, so maybe that's the starting point for, when sides do come down here. Clearly, New Zealand cricket, look at, I'd imagine, costs and hosting rights, and Whanganui seem to be very much in favour at the moment at Bay Oval. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to get sides down here, put them in New Zealand conditions. You know, that's the advantage of playing at home. You've got to be a little careful when you do that with the Indians, because the Indian machine above the Indian cricket team will basically just say, that's not good enough, we'll cut your funding. So India can sort of get away with a little bit of bullying. But yeah, look, it's always good when South African cricket come out here. It sort of seems most summers we always seem to get a Bangladesh or a Sri Lanka or a Pakistan, and you want the South African sides, you want the, you know, England's out here, you want the Australians playing out here.
And I think, especially with South Africa, with the big expat South African community, see that you are going to draw crowds there, and hopefully we can try and keep a certain thing out, which I'm not going to mention at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's the other issue, and you've got a sensitive coming, isn't it? And you do wonder whether it's only a matter of time before sport gets shut down, and we go into another one of these lockdowns, and. The nightmare for sports administrators continues. But, you know, South Africa's been good to us, isn't it? We've got Bevan Conway, I think, out of South Africa.
Elliott.
Yeah, we've got Elliott out of South Africa, Neil Wagner's South African, so, and I think there's one more on that side, isn't there? So, you know, we've got, that sort of migration around the world, we're starting to see sort of that South African bloodline, if I can use that word, starting to come through into our teams. In saying that, though, Eamon, we haven't really seen a lot of sort of South Africans really sort of step up in rugby, have we? You know, we haven't really seen a lot of the sort of South African names or those of South African descent really establishing themselves in the New Zealand rugby scene, which has been surprising.
Okay, yeah, I'd have to agree with you, Mark. Well, unfortunately, Mark, we're just about to run out of time. I want to thank you for your time today. Next week, we're going to have the panel back. You have a great rest of the day, Mark.